Okay, are you ready over there, Shelley? Okay. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this last day of January, January 31st, 2012. I would ask the members of the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, Matt.
Welcome to all of us, all of those in attendance today. It's always great to have members of the public here, and we have an opportunity later to hear from a few of you, so we're pleased to have this opportunity. The next item is the approval of the minutes of 1-24-12.
Moved. Second.
It's been moved and second. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Thank you. The next item is public comments. This is where members of the audience may address the board on topics on today's agenda. Did want to know if there was anyone that wanted to comment regarding a topic on today's agenda. Okay. Seeing no one, then we'll move on. No public hearing, and the first item is the consideration and recommendation of a proposal to codify county ordinances. Stephen Owen, Assistant County Attorney. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you. Good morning, Board. I know you have a prior written opinion from me dated December 30th. I won't rehash that in great detail. I think the bottom line is we need to accomplish this task. It's a very unglamorous and not very shiny sort of thing we do in government, but one that the code requires. We're required to codify our ordinances every 5 years. We haven't done that in some time. I would advise the board and the public who's here that it does not impair the efficacy of our ordinances. It is, I think, in the nature and category of sort of a ministerial function that we just simply have to do. We've received proposals from several companies. I've listed them in a descending order of cost. And I think the bottom line really is the more you spend, the more you get. So the question is, what do we need and how much do we want to get? I think when we started this program last summer, we'd estimated a cost somewhere around $15,000 to $20,000. The estimates range from $7,500 to slightly over $13,000, somewhat less than we, I think, had originally estimated. Again, the more you spend, the more you get in terms of flash. All of the companies really offer the basic requirement of organizing and codifying to some degree. I understand, speaking with Alyssa, that the money that I think may have been set aside is there's some interest in using that for other projects as well. So just keeping that in mind. Really, I think what it boils down to is can we get an organized set of ordinances that the public can access easily and simply? In looking on the current website, I don't know that I think that that is a someone has clearly put some effort in, but I don't know that I think a member of the public would find that particularly helpful or even useful. And as I have noted to the board in the past, our ordinances really are our prime statement of public policy to the public, and really I think one of the prime points of contact for the public policies here in place in Story County. So I think they need to be organized, they need to be useful, they need to be materially and substantially available to a person of reasonable competence. And I think that the services offered by Iowa Codification of Clear Lake, Iowa, would meet those needs. I've looked at samples from all of the companies. They all, again, do the same basic thing. They essentially organize and codify ordinances in sort of an outline format based upon categories and topics, subchapters, and that sort of thing. Each of them has their own particular and unique ways of accomplishing that. But I think we will get probably what we need for $7,500 from Iowa Codification. They are the only Iowa company that submitted a proposal. I think on some level there may be some interest in keeping the money as local as possible here in the state. I would say all of the companies that provided the proposals were very generous with their time, easy to work with. I think they provided very professional proposals. And the question now just really comes down to what do we need with the limited amount of funds that we have to accomplish the task here. So with that, I'll ask the board for any input, questions, comments, or discussion.
First thought comes to mind. First of all, thank you for your work and effort along this line. And I know that this has been something that we've been talking about for the last several years, and we're getting close to arriving at a decision that will kind of put this in a format easy and accessible and ability to understand. My question is from a practical standpoint. Normally, if an ordinance is adopted by the board, either through zoning or from some other aspect, the auditor's office, the zoning department, would we then send that information to whoever the vendor is, and then they put that in under the proper category, because I would imagine they will probably be in some form of category. So it just helps us with where they're located and whether they follow the same basic format for.
Yes, I think that's correct, Mr. Clinton. That's a good point, is that, you know, a code of ordinances is a living document that the board can add to it by passage of new ordinances, modify it through modification of ordinances. It's a living document. Each of the companies does provide ongoing maintenance. That can be done on a monthly basis, quarterly, semi-annual. Really, I think there's a lot of flexibility in how that is accomplished. So that is correct. And obviously, there will be some ongoing maintenance to make sure that the code of ordinances is kept up to date and reasonably current.
So at no point would we assume that each time they had to be an addition, that there's a cost for that service in addition to the $7,500?
No, there would be.
Yeah, so I guess that's part of it.
That's right. That's right.
Unfortunately.
Yes, there would be.
But because we have the ability through the website, once we get that up, why couldn't we basically just...
That's correct. Iowa codification does offer the ability for us to do it ourselves. That obviously internally would require someone to be assigned to that duty to do that, but they do offer that they would essentially provide the initial organization and turn it back over to us if we so choose.
Yeah, it looks to me like we could get it from them as a Word document, and then it's ours to maintain if they organize everything, and I had trouble really understanding what the extra charges were, but it looks to me like for $1,000 a year, they'll maintain it, they'll keep it updated on our website, they'll do all the nuts and bolts on it.
Yeah,
am I reading that the right way?
That's right, yes.
Great. And to me it's important that I mean, if you look at what we've got now, it's just kind of a hodgepodge of what was put together. And I think if we can put something together that's consistent, uses the same format, and we continue to use the same format from here on out, would I think we'll end up with a much better product. So
I would agree.
So in terms of action at this point, we're not really proposing, are we, that we go with this one vendor that is listed. I noticed you're saying consideration and recommendation of the proposal, but yet we have before us several options.
We do.
So I'm wondering if that isn't shouldn't be part of the action if we deem it necessary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I read this, Wayne, we do have several options, but we also have a recommendation from Stephen to go with Iowa codification. And just looking at the work they've done for cities, and specifically, guys, I looked at the ones where they maintained it and kept it up to date in a kind of a folio format. So that I think that's Clear Lake and Pella and Coralville maybe that are using it. To me, you know, we're spending this money to have a new website. We're really focusing. We're talking about video cameras. We're really focusing on being more accessible to the public. And to me, one of the huge areas that has to be easily and readily accessible is our ordinances. And This, to me, is the time to do it. The cost does not seem excessive. When we talked it through, I mean, it's half of what we originally projected it was going to cost us.
Yes.
$1,000 a year to make sure that we have a responsible party for keeping it up to date seems to me to be a really reasonable cost. Again, just to make sure that all of this stuff is really accessible, we're organized, we're able to find things. I mean, Stephen, I think when you started this project, it was difficult just pulling together all our ordinances, wasn't it?
That's correct.
And we need to get away from that. So I won't move it at this point, but Wayne, I'm moving down the line of moving that we go with the recommendation of our assistant county attorney and move ahead.
I could just interject. I think that's correct. What I'm really looking for is which company do I begin focusing on at this point? You know, I think we've gathered information from each of them, and I certainly do not have a contract to put before you, but I need to begin that process of working on how do we ultimately get to this goal. And
it looks to me like they're suggesting it's about a two-month process from the time we say go to get it done. So it starts to fall in line pretty well with the rollout of our new website if we get moving on this thing.
I think that's correct. They've even offered to come down and visit with us for an afternoon or two at no cost, simply because of the proximity that they're at.
Questions?
Okay. Moved, right?
No, I said I was starting to head down that way. I was wanting to give Wayne a chance to speak to it.
I think what we have here before us, and based on the last two comments, I think it would be we would need to have a formal request to have the county attorney to move forward if the Iowa Codification is the firm that we want to enter into an agreement with, and therefore he can then bring back the final document at a later time for us to approve if everything meets specifications. So I think it would be appropriate for us to entertain a motion to move forward with working with Iowa Codification Company for the completion of this task.
So moved.
It's been moved and second that we authorize the Assistant County Attorney to move forward with negotiations with Iowa Codification for the complete effort of codifying the county ordinances. And any further comments or discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Again, thank you for your work and effort, and
thank you.
I look forward to hearing back from you later. Okay? Okay, our next area is consideration of FY 12-13 asset recommendation. County CPC Director Deb Shilron. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Got my coffee. I don't know how I was going to make it without that. Oh,
ready?
That's what I need. Thanks.
Okay. Have you had an opportunity yet to discuss, share this with Lisa, or will that be something that will be discussed prior to what action we take?
I typically do that after.
Okay. Okay.
If you want to move over one chair.
Move over to the other one. It seems like it's.
That light is brighter over here.
We're working on taking care of that, Deb, where it doesn't matter where you sit.
All right. What I have before you are the asset recommendations for fiscal year 13. The second sheet that I just passed out to you is primarily for informational purposes only. Those are figures that Youth and Shelter Services provides to me each year. They receive dollars from juvenile court, and those juvenile court dollars do run through the county's budget, but they're administered through the juvenile court office here in Story County. But YSS provides those numbers to us for informational purposes so that we can see what dollars they're getting from the state as well as they're asking from the county. To begin with, the general basic total that Asset worked with was $457,000. Out of that amount, $434,247 was allocated. $19,760 of that has been reserved, and I'll talk about why that is in a moment. And the unallocated amount is $2,993. And I do want to point out, we had a little extra money in the process, primarily because an agency, the Center for Child Care Resources, closed last June, and the county had typically been funding them about $8,100 a year for the services that they provide. And the organization that took the place of Center for Child Care Resources, Orchard Place, was requesting about $3,600. So there was a little bit of play in available in those dollars. The other agency, Red Cross, didn't request as much from the county as they had in the past. In fiscal year 10, they asked for, or they were allocated $2,900. In fiscal year 11, they were allocated $2,650. And so there were a few extra dollars left over in the general basic fund because they weren't requesting as much money from the county. Local option, the total amount available was $15,000. We pull the administrative expenses out of local option, and that amount is $3,575. Those dollars cover our administrative support person as well as expenses such as printing and postage and those miscellaneous things. The amount allocated to services was $11,425. Are there any questions at this point? Okay. The document that's entitled Asset Budget Report Fiscal Year 13, that lists out by fund, so by general basic, local option, mental health, and public health, the dollars that the asset volunteers recommended for each service within each agency. And I do want to note that the recommendation from the volunteers is that we are withholding dollars at this point from about four agencies. And those agencies are Big Brothers, Big Sisters, the Red Cross, Heartland Senior Services, excuse me, and Richmond Center CFR. And the reason why we're withholding dollars is due to unanswered questions and information we're still needing from these agencies with regards to their budgets and to their audits. And then additionally, for Richmond Center and CFR, we're in the RFP process right now, so we are waiting to see where that process takes us in terms of who will be providing the mental health services in fiscal year 13. If you look on page 2 under Heartland Senior Services, we have three transportation lines. The first transportation line is for the county route transportation, and the amount recommended there is $83,000. Then we have Transportation Iowa City. That transportation is specific to residents needing to go to Iowa City for medical care. And then the third transportation line is, we coined it county reserved, and that amount is $19,760. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that reserved line. Typically, the county has been funding about $110,000 towards transportation for Heartland Senior Services, and their asking this year was way below that. And what they did in turn is increased their asking of the county for their meal programs. And they've always drawn down all of their funds for transportation. So I'm very concerned that if we just left it at the $83,000, which is more than what they asked for, but if we left it just at that, we could still end up short come probably the middle of next fiscal year. One of the things that Heartland has talked to HRDA about is defining their trips differently so that the trips are more appropriately billed to the right funder. And Heartland started doing that, I believe, in January. They might have looked at that in December, but for sure in January of this year, they've been looking at the person's residence. And so if we have an individual who lives in Maxwell and Heartland picks the individual up in Maxwell, takes them to Ames, to McFarland Clinic, then to Walmart, and then to Hy-Vee and then back to Maxwell, all of that, all of those trips would be should be billed to the county. What Heartland had originally thought they needed to do was bill the trip to the county just to get the person from Maxwell to Ames, and then any other trips happening in Ames and then back to the person's home were all billed to the city of Ames. And so now they have a clearer picture on how they're supposed to bill these trips. So I expect the dollars to be used even quicker if they're more appropriately billing the trips as they should. So that is why we've set that $19,760 aside in the event those dollars are needed to cover the trips now that they are billing them more appropriately. The volunteers worked very hard this year. We spent much more time during the panel work sessions discussing the allocation amounts, making sure that dollars were meeting the funders' priorities, and looking at outcomes and that information that's provided by the agencies. So I think we have a pretty good set of recommendations here, and I can answer any questions.
By no means consider myself completely a knowledgeable expert in this particular area, but as the current chair of the HRDA board right now, we are closely concerned with the continual viability of transportation services for Story County. And we've been working closely with Heartland regarding some of the transitions and some of the questions that are they're dealing with. And we feel very comfortable. The new director and staff has been coming to our meetings and so forth. At our last meeting, though, I had a side meeting, and the question did come up about the request to the county to be able to shift some of those dollars, particularly in the foods meals program, because it is of their opinion that unless there's additional dollars coming from either the asset providers or the community at large, some clients are going to go without service, that they're going to have to be able to cut back and not be able to provide service. And part of the issue also is, I'll just use a community in the eastern, southeastern part of the county, they can't get volunteers to actually drive and the meals to them. And so therefore, that may be an area that will be immediately impacted. And so my comment basically is, I said that I don't think that the county really wants to shift the transportation dollars at this point because of the uncertainty of how that's going to take place. And our main concern is to make sure that the clients do have the ability to get to and from the various things, whether it's medical related or what have you. But if there was a way that we could work with them toward additional funding in the meals program, we would keep the options open. However, they may need to come back to other local community providers, other not-for-profit agencies, churches, what have you, to shore up the additional dollars. I understand that they went to the city of Nevada, asked for a certain allocation. They didn't get quite the amount they were hoping for, so there is there's a gap there. And part of our challenge as a county will be is, could we find additional capacity, whether, and I'm talking in the neighborhood of $2,500 toward that process. We may not be able to do that right now, but I'd like to at least explore whether or not that's feasible and whether that may come from some of the reserves or what have you. But I do know that that's going to be an ongoing question that the asset providers are going to be faced with, and whether we have any capacity to even give a small amount of assistance, particularly in that area, or not. I think the bottom line is, even though our dollars are focused on transportation, we still do have a concern for delivery of meals to clients who really have a great need out there, and how that can be done. So I know that's a long gyration, but it kind of frames the problem as it was presented to me.
And just a couple of comments back. Two of the county's funding priorities in the asset process are transportation and housing,
right,
and then the well-being of adults and children. So certainly meals would fall under that, the well-being part of it. At the very beginning of the allocation process, Heartland Senior Services did issue a request to ASSET for $93,000 for the current fiscal year for their nutrition program. And we simply haven't had an opportunity to sit down and really delve into that because we wanted to get through this funding cycle first and then go back and look at it. And at the point that we got that request, we had not yet received Heartland's fiscal year 11 audit, and we have since received that. And there's some things in there that aren't really matching up that we need some clarification on. So we will be revisiting that with Liz and her staff to get a really clear picture on where is their nutrition program. I know that they had a separate audit done on nutrition and a separate audit done on transportation to get their numbers together, their big cost centers for Heartland, and so they really wanted to get their heads wrapped around what are they dealing with. So question for you, Wayne, the $2,500 additional dollars, is that for the current fiscal year or is that for next fiscal year, or did
I seem to think it has more to do with right now, current
okay.
fiscal year. But again, that's a topic that needs to be discussed, and I only bring it up from the standpoint is that you are, you know, our main point of contact in this particular area, and if we had any capacity and whether we needed additional information, first of all, see if that's feasible or not, and come back at a later date and let us know if there's a possibility. I think I obviously don't speak for the other two, but I know that where there is a community need, and if we can assist in some way, you know, we'd certainly want to try to address that. But at the same time, we want to keep in mind what are our priorities and what impact the funding for those will be, and there are still some uncertainties out there that we need assurance on. So, good.
And that's been my plan, is once we sort of flush out the details and the information on that nutrition request, I would be coming to the board to get that addressed.
Okay.
The other thing with transportation is it's my understanding that the City of Ames, their SciRide, contracts with Heartland to provide the Dial-A-Ride services.
Brilliant.
And SciRide has decided to let that out for an RFP for next fiscal year. And that's about $150,000 to $160,000 a year contract. So that would definitely have an impact on Heartland's transportation budget as well. So, again, having the county dollars available for whoever is going to be providing that transportation, I think, is very important.
Well, that takes care of Heartland for me. Can we go through the other three, and we'll save the best for last? Can we start with Big Brothers?
Yes.
Is it just an administrative issue? Wayne, I think I believe you're still on that board. Is there?
Oh, I'm not on Big Brothers.
Okay,
no,
I thought you were.
No, totally.
A Boys and Girls Club.
Boys and Girls Club are different.
What's going on with Big Brothers, Big Sisters?
Well, again, we got their audit in kind of in the middle of the whole allocation process, and we'll need to sit down with the program director here and figure out. A couple of the Big Brother, Big Sister programs have closed within the central Iowa area, but, well, actually in southeast Iowa too. And so we want to make sure that the costs and expenses allocated to Story County are aligned with the program that's here in Story County, and that we're not picking that up elsewhere.
Yep.
And we also want to get a better handle on the numbers of units being provided and matches. It's a growing program here in the county, and I think it's, at least for the sake of the public, I think it's important to point out the difference between what Big Brothers Big Sisters does for mentoring and what YSS does for mentoring. When Big Brothers Big Sisters came to ASSET to become an agency funded through the ASSET process, we were clear in saying that's fine, but we can't have a duplication of service. So they're providing the community-based mentoring. where YSS, through their GRIP mentoring program, provides school-based mentoring. So that's how we're keeping the two separate, and I think there are enough children and families to go around to be able to access those programs.
Thank you. Red Cross, obviously with the change in the Lincoln Way chapter of the Red Cross, do we have any idea what they're hoping to get from us and what they're providing back out of Des Moines?
That's what we need to get a handle on. While we still have an active group of volunteers for Red Cross here in Story County, the administrative part of it is being done out of Des Moines. We're actually kind of a part of the Red Cross office there. Right now there is a staff person who shares his time among Ames, Ottumwa, and Marshalltown, I believe, and he's in Ames on Mondays. And that's it. And he's more of a community liaison, public relations kind of person, not necessarily the hands-on providing the health and safety services and disaster preparedness and disaster response kinds of services. So we need to sit down. The Red Cross budget was a little confusing for Asset. It was done by this gentleman who did it for the very first time, and we appreciate that, we recognize that, but we just need some more clarification. And it was turned in later in the process than what we were hoping. And so normally we have a lot of this stuff already fleshed out before we get to the allocation process, but there were just some extenuating circumstances on these situations that we're now kind of backpedaling and trying to get it figured out before we start contracts.
Okay, and how much is the recommendation, and I assume we're withholding 100% of the recommendation from Asset, how much is the recommendation for Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and how much for Red Cross from the volunteers?
Total or just the county?
Just the county.
County.
It's for Red Cross, it's the $1,200.
Okay.
And for Big Brothers, Big Sisters, it's $1,654.
And tell me again the total for Heartland.
Heartland Senior Services, their total is $168,988.
And we're just withholding part of that or all of it?
All of it.
We're withholding all of that at this point. Okay, now the good one. Richmond Center CFR, what's the total dollars that we are recommending we allocate toward them, and are we withholding all of it at this point?
Okay. For the Richmond, for the mental health services, because that comes out of MHDD, the total is $242,302. And then for community and family resources, that's on page one. That comes out of general basic. That's $6,480, and we're holding all $6,480, and then all of the MHDD dollars. And that, again, we're waiting on fiscal year 11 audits and the RFP process.
Do we as supervisors, okay, if we move ahead with approval of the recommendations of the Asset Board, do we then have a chance to come back and discuss these four before we release those dollars, or is that part of our motion? How does that work?
How that will work is I will come back to you to give you updates. If you go ahead and approve it today, it's contingent upon the information that we get that I will report back to you at a later date. This will all need to be resolved before we start any contracts.
Good question.
Yeah, my intention would be to go ahead and approve the asset recommendation withholding these dollars. But I want to be able, as a board, to come back and release these dollars one by one when we get to the point that we have that kind of recommendation. I don't want it just to automatically happen.
Right.
I want
exactly.
to be a little
yeah.
more hands-on on these
right.
on these
right.
four.
Right. Good.
So if there's nothing further, I would go ahead and move exactly that. I'd move approval of the asset recommendations, noting the dollars that are currently being withheld, and that this board wants to weigh in heavily before any of those dollars are released.
I'll second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of the asset recommendation as brought forth with the understanding that we support the withholding of the funds as outlined and an opportunity to address this at a later date before those funds are allocated. So are there any further comments, discussion by the board? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
The other additional thing I just wanted to make the board aware of is the asset administrative team through this this most recent process has determined some training needs for agencies. One of those training needs is the education of what to expect from your board of directors. How involved should they be? What are their responsibilities? We just see that as a need as we look through, especially some of the financial information and the impact that that has on the agencies. So the other area of training would be on audits. What do agencies do when they get their audits? A lot of times they let us know how expensive it is to go through an audit, but what do they do with that information once they receive it and how that information should match up to the asset budget forms when they turn those into the administrative team. So those are two areas that we're going to work on, finding some training and providing that to the agencies. I know United Way several years ago had a nonprofit academy that they offered, and I actually went to a few of those trainings. They were very good, and so we're going to look to see if maybe that would be available again, especially in these areas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next presenter, Renee Tweet, consideration of the revision of the investment policy to include drainage warrants or waivers. Take your time as you two come up.
Animals, man. Mr. Chair, point of order here. I'm going to want to pull 9 under the consent agenda, which is not directly related, but we're having this a similar conversation, and I don't know if it's appropriate for us to discuss that while we've got them sitting here, or we need to bring them back up when we get to the consent agenda.
Basically, we would pull it at the time that we're ready to deal with the consent agenda for
yes, discussion.
Either that or call them back. Okay? All right. Welcome.
Good morning.
Great to have both of you, and this is a very important topic. So take it away, dealing with our investment policy.
Investment policy was amended to add...
pull it closer to you.
To add just 6 words so that we can do the drainage... investments. I believe it's on page 3.
Mm-hmm.
We added number 5, drainage warrants and waiver drainage certificates. And I'm going to let Jane explain the process. She can explain it more in layman's terms that you'll understand because she's thought through this a lot more. And she has called the other counties, and between the two of us, we've researched this. I think we have it down straight. And how it should work.
Well, I look that one maybe a little closer. The light, I think that she'll pick it up, but she'll let us know. Okay.
Okay. I did call Hamilton County, and they
have to come closer. Sorry.
A little closer.
I did call Hamilton County, and they have a large number of stamped drainage certificates that they use, and they use that as an investment tool. They actually. Instead of having, well, they do have stamped drainages, but they buy them, and that is their investment. And when the funds are available, then they repay that along with the associated interest.
Can you explain, once again in layman's term, what a stamp just what a stamped drainage certificate actually is?
When a warrant is issued to a contractor, and there is not funds available in that drainage district to pay that, then we hold that until there are funds available, and then we have to pay interest on that from the date that the warrant was issued to the date of payment.
And that coincides with number 9 on the consent agenda. Story County has had the rate of 7%, which no one really knows whose duty it is to make that coincide with what the state put out there for a rate.
So basically, the major change is the addition here, because this is, again, the area that we're now confronted with the work being done on the drainage districts and the need to provide dollars to the completion of that project. When we enter into some of the various projects, not only now but in the future, do we notify contractors basically up front how we proceed, how we plan to honor that payment via stamp warrant, or what? Do you understand? Do you know how we? What type of communication is normally available to the contractors? Lisa, I don't know, could you help us out maybe in this regard? I know this may run through your office as well.
What typically happens is when Scott Wall in our office is working with the drainage and with you guys as far as what the needs are, he tells the contractors up front that there's this amount of money, there's that amount of money, there's not enough money, we won't be able to levy until a certain time, and then you'll expect payment after that. Yes, whoever is doing a large project, or even, it can be a lot of the stamps we have right now are secondary road stamp that they
right.
have. They've done projects and they know they're not going to get money until after we levy. And since we only levy usually in July, then
right.
it's next September before dollars are actually available. So not only do they talk about it when they're talking about the project, I also, whenever I issue any stamped check to a drainage or a drainage issue, I send a letter saying, we have issued this. You are not going to get your money until there's money available. We'll pay you an interest rate of blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Then I send a check down to Jane so that when the money starts coming in, she can cash that, pay them with interest.
Okay.
From the date of issuance.
And right now the interest rate we pay is 7%.
7%.
But the state has set it at 6%.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we have a mechanism in our investment policy that says we're going to pay the rate that as set by the state? Can we have that? Right, but it seems to me if we have an investment policy that says our rate will be that which is set by the state, then it automatically fluctuates based on what the state says. I don't know if we can do that or not, and maybe that's a question for Steve Owen.
It maybe makes sense, but again, it comes back to that question that I raised regarding the Home Rule Authority and what capacity, based upon projects that you can, what is the leverage that we have at the county local level? In some cases, legislation says we cannot exceed what the state has, but we can be lower than what the state offers. And so I think that's the only question that I would have is, obviously, I think the board could establish a policy that the state rate will always be a consideration, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we would have to abide by that. We could probably have a lower rate if we so deemed. Is that correct?
And my understanding of the drainage code, aside from everything else, the drainage code says that the Board of Supervisors sets the rate for drainage district, for drainage stamped warrants. So that's why it's got to come to the board to say this is what we're going to set for drainage.
But we have
the board,
a minimum and a maximum.
The board should be able to set the rate for the work in the drainage district, or for the warrants in the drainage district, but we can't exceed what the state has said.
Right.
So it can be up
as
to
a minimum and maximum.
Right.
6% is a maximum.
Right.
Right. But now just
I'm
help
coming
me
back
this,
to what he's
two,
saying.
Okay, it's two separate things now. We're talking about paying for the work that is done, and then we're talking about collecting money in the form of the assessments, and then ultimately we're going to talk about carrying some of those. And we'll save that conversation. All right, so right now we're talking about paying the contractor who's done the work right here. Clearly, we're not going to have the money in the account between now and the time that we levy for it, right? So we're going to pay them what between now and interest that they hold those warrants?
7% currently.
Maximum rate from the state is 6%, though.
Interest.
Maximum rate from the state is 6. I mean, I don't know how we're paying out 7% if the maximum rate from the state is 6.
The last time this was changed, or adopted by the county, was in 2001. And it hasn't been touched since, or
right.
I don't know, it's just been swept under the rug, 2000.
Well, and maybe this is something that needs to be on our agenda for the organizational meeting, is that we recognize or... I don't know if they'll have the rate set by then there, but...
She has. Every year, we don't know whose responsibility it is to bring this topic up and change it. No one could find
make
anything.
It yours.
Going back in the records, I think Shelley dug, I think Alyssa dug, Lisa dug, and nobody could find how this got changed back in 2000. And that was before any of us.
No, the board changed it, but we didn't find any documentation for it.
The board had to change it, I would assume, but I don't know if that question ever came up in relationship to what the state was at that time. I think, yeah, we were probably looking at what the current interest rates were on most things back at that time and thought that, giving one more over would probably be a kind of a good thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
But so, Rick, going back
all
to your question.
All we're considering right this second is adding point number 5, drainage warrants or waiver drainage certificates.
Correct.
We're not considering anything else at this point.
Right.
I move adoption of the revised investment policy to include point 5.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to consideration of the revised Story County investment policy to include warrants or warrants for the drainage district as outlined. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Please stick around for some conversation when we get to...
Part 2.
Yeah, when we get to consent agenda. And Steve Owen, I think I'm going to need you for that conversation as well.
Okay. All right. Item 5, consideration and discussion of the Story County logo and seal terms of use policy. Matt Emerson from IT. Welcome, Matt.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm really excited about addressing you guys about this today. This is kind of dovetails with some of the things that we're going to try to do with our internet presence. And what we have right now is we've got kind of two different images or brands that we use as a county government, a county agency. And what this logo policy does kind of steers us a little bit more in the direction of using the logo as our public persona or public image that we use, and kind of relegate the seal, which is behind the board right now, more to a legal or official capacity that would be used on legal notices or things like that. That effectively kind of unifies and strengthens the image that's presented through the logo that we have. This policy also outlines and regulates kind of the usage of the logo to make sure that it maximizes its effectiveness and that we have kind of standards that are applied to its use throughout operations on county vehicles, business cards, whatever else. So it also includes some legal protections. If the board is not aware of this as of now, I'll let you know that we've had this logo copyrighted, and it's also been submitted to the Secretary of State of Iowa as a service mark, and Steve Owens helped us out an awful lot with that, with some direction on that. Give him kind of a tip of the hat here for helping us with that. So this logo kind of provides some protections within the county, and obviously we've made accommodations for protections of usage outside the county as well. There are a couple things on here that kind of establish a timeline to try to switch things over. Obviously, that's up for consideration or revision at any time, but we'd really like to have a unified usage of the county logo on just about everything that the county does in the public eye. So, and that's kind of outlined in this this document here. So,
are we? I mean, I understand that we've got some vehicles that still have the old seal on it. It looks to me like you'll give them 12 months if we adopt this policy. We have 12 months to get those updated, and we're going to, you know, make sure that all our new purchases. Are we having any problems right now with any of our departments or offices not following our logo guidelines as they're presented here?
For the most part, no. And when we had the logo created, our department kind of went through and gave them a lot of templates and things that they used. There's really nothing right now, however, that would keep somebody from maybe modifying it a little bit or whatever else. So from an intellectual property standpoint and just kind of to maintain consistency in the application of the logo, this is more of kind of a proactive measure than anything else, but we haven't had any problems with anybody changing things or colors or whatnot.
This may be more of a question for the auditor and the treasurers, but we also used the term county seal. In the past, the county seal basically was a representative here that we used on all of our logos. We're still using that in some of our official documentation and legal notices and so forth. Is that probably not correct, as far as you know, Stephen? The use of the seal itself and most of the documents that are...
No, actually, I think for most documents, no, it's not correct. I mean, if memory serves me correctly, because we're a municipal corporation, we're required to have a seal.
Right.
And so the seal that's over the board there has been adopted as the official seal. That should be attached to official documents. The logo, on the other hand, is a
right.
is a brand, if Matt's indicating yes. Right. So that's a different non-formal, informal branding device.
Great. Thank you.
So just so I've got this straight in my head, if Renee wanted to say county treasurer, she needs to use the farm logo. If she wants to say office of the treasurer, she can use the county seal.
Correct. Yes.
But those aren't interchangeable.
Or, well, you know, there's nothing to say that they couldn't appear on the same document. But for purposes of lending some degree of officiality, that this is a statement of policy coming from a particular office that has the county's backing and approval, then the seal should be used.
But then you can't back the seal up with the informal...
Well, you're not really backing it up.
You're
All
not
I'm saying is if it were to appear under her signature on a signature line, there'd be no particular problem with that I could see.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's always been my impression that the logo would be widely dispersed and used, more to associate an emotional or a service response to what we do as a county, whereas the seal is more of an endorsement or something would be used sparingly just on property tax statements, any kind of legal notifications, things like that as well. And that was really what initiated the whole exploration of trying to do a logo instead, is that we didn't really want the county seal used profusely so that it would be prone to abuse or misuse with that. So that's kind of where we got to setting up a separate logo instead of using the county seal. So.
Right. Thank you for that explanation. Appreciate it. Okay. Any other questions to Matt at this point?
I would move approval of the county's logo and seal use policy, and I think this is one of those that will go out for a 7-day review
Okay.
Any department that wants to make comments can get back to us within 7 days.
Second.
It's been moved in second. The approval of the Story County seal and logo and seal use policy to be disseminated for the 7-day review. Any further comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Thanks for your work.
You can
Thanks, Matt.
Continue to be excited.
Another one off the list. Okay. Right there. One at a time.
Okay. Shelley, just a point of clarification. We do have claims this week. Is that correct? And so I see it listed per se. Again, the older I get, the more I start thinking about whether we should actually have a statement that acknowledge the approval of claims or something like that.
Sure, we can.
I think it would make it more formal that action was taken rather than just seeing it stated as the word claims just in the future. I don't know if that makes a big difference or not, but it would be consistent with the other things that we do. Lisa, do you have an opinion or a thought concerning that? I know it's our agenda. It's our agenda. But in terms of how we address the approval of claims.
We can just add it, Wayne. It's not that big of a deal.
Yep.
Okay, great. I would like that. Yeah. Right, exactly. Great. Okay, with that, we have I would entertain a motion concerning the claims for this period.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of the claims. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Claims are approved. No agency report, no departmental report. How about liaison reports and committee updates? Anything?
Pass.
Okay. And now we're moving on down to item number 9, update on KHOI radio. Ursula Rutenberg, station manager, come on down. And I see you have some other members here, so feel free to take the chairs there. And welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
So again, state your name and who you represent for the record, since the audio is being picked up by anyone who cares to listen. Okay.
I'm Ursula Rutenberg. I'm the project manager for KHOI Radio. And I'm here with Mr. Don Wirth, who is part of our planning team and our fundraising chair.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
We're primarily here to introduce ourselves formally to you and to initiate communication between us and you. Very briefly, explanation of who we are. We are a newly being built community radio station in Story County, some of Boone and some of Hamilton and Hardin, but primarily Story County. We will be a nonprofit 501c3. We are a nonprofit 501c3. We were allocated a frequency in 2009 by the FCC. And we will be on the air by August of this year, which is our deadline, actually, from the FCC. We're headquartered in Ames down in Main Street, actually right off of Main Street on Douglas. And we are in the process of our capital campaign and building the station. We are part of a type of media that's a little bit new to this area. Community radio is a nonprofit form of radio making, which is expressly for the goal of community building. So we include the community in the process of making radio. We focus on primarily local radio and local voices and local issues, and essentially present ourselves as a resource to the community to improve the quality of life. This type of radio is conducted in many parts of the country, in fact, many parts of the world, and is extremely successful in building the quality of life and the enjoyment and the attractiveness of the community area that it serves. So we're very excited to bring it to Story County, and we are, in a sense, offering ourselves as a resource to anybody that wants to or is involved with community building. So obviously we have an important relationship to build with you and would like to be in dialogue with you as to how to best use these resources. A lot of the services that we've heard discussed today KJOI would serve as a tool to notify people and to build more understanding about what kind of services are available. And also, I think the primary service of a station like this is to greatly enhance communication in the service of building community, whether it is in promoting local business or local culture, or being able to provide a format for public discourse over community issues. And in this sense, we recently saw this article that was in the Tribune about a study, what was it, by the American Planning Association about economic improvement. And really, in the plan outline, we could see many, many ways that community radio can help in partnering with you to really push these ideas forward. And I noticed one of the things they did not recommend was increased mass communication about these issues. So we would propose to put that on the list, too, of really valuable ways to move this forward. I'm going to let Don speak for a minute and then really just see if you have any questions you'd like to ask us. I think if there's anything we would like today, it would be just to learn from you how we should begin to build a dialogue with you about how we can work together in terms of community building.
Thank you for having us this morning.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for allowing us to speak to you this morning. As Ursula said, our community is Story County and touching into the surrounding counties. So we want to find a way to communicate, to spread the word about what's happening in Story County. One of our first big accomplishments was to receive a grant from the Story County Community Foundation as part of our capital campaign. And as we sat at the awards ceremony for that, we heard of services in Story County that we weren't aware of before. We hope to be able to reduce that lack of knowledge about services throughout the county through the programming that we're able to provide. Radio is a free, over-the-air broadcast medium that anyone who can afford a $7 radio, $8 radio, should be able to hear us in Story County. And by doing that, we hope to expand the community, the communication, to build community about what's happening in Story County, and to further discussion about it, and hopefully bring that discussion to the point where decisions that are made are more enlightened because more people have had the opportunity to discuss them and have input into them, and will further the advancement of Story County and the communities within Story County. We've started to reach out to the citizens of each of the smaller communities, Story City, Huxley. We've had discussions with leaders in those communities, and we intend to expand upon that. We've had discussions with folks at Youth and Shelter Services about a youth radio program and the topics that would be available for that. So that just gives you a sampling of what we've been able to do here in our startup phase as we build our station, and we will be broadcasting, as Ursula said, in August. We will be a community-supported radio station. We will depend on the beneficence of our listeners to provide funding for the radio station and to help us continue our operations. So we're not on the air yet. We're coming. And we wanted to begin a partnership with you, the supervisor of Story County, and to let you know that we're here to help expand the quality of life and to assist in economic development as you move forward.
Good. Well, thank you. Just a little feedback here. As one of the actions that the board would be able to do is, as you get up and running, we do have a list of notifications for what's happening in Story County via press releases and other types of things that go out to the local medias, the TV stations, etc. And you could certainly be included in that. And as things such as the report that we just received and ongoing dialogues regarding the Economic Development Initiative through CPAT, once in a while you may find reaching out to some of the members of departments that are directly responsible for that to have them on to just kind of talk about, you know, what is happening, you know, in that area may be something you might want to consider. And that's another way that the county could help inform you regarding some of the things that were basically taking place. But as we begin to move forward right now, the audio of the board proceedings is available. But as we reach a point where we will be able to video stream as well what's happening, this is, again, another opportunity that you could see what's happening in Story County and then decide how you might want to gain additional information to make it available to the public. So I see that off the bat a good way to start. But when I got the call regarding you, I thought that this would be a good opportunity for you to come and present to the board, to be a part of public outreach, letting the public know where you are now in the process and how soon you thought you would be up and running. And hopefully there would be a great deal of community support for the type of programming that you have in mind. Okay, anything else from either of you two?
I would just reiterate what Wayne said about the audio from these meetings being available just shortly after the meetings are over, I think. Is that correct? So if anybody listens to that and has any questions, feel free to give us a call, and we'll try to explain it for you.
Yeah, I think we need a Wayne Clinton variety hour at some point during the
Come on. I've designated Paul as our PIO.
How is the...
Got a nice voice for it.
Are we still in the middle of the initial phase? I read in here you've got an initial capital campaign of $60,000 and then a secondary one to help build the studios of $40,000. Can you tell us where you are in those two and how is the community support to this point?
Community support is growing. Okay. We're new, so it's taking a while for people to get used to the idea. We're in the initial phase, which is the $60,000, which is what we need to literally get on the air. That would not be without it. That would be without a studio facility. We're at $41,000 right now.
Yes.
We do have some operating monies too, not a lot. I would say maybe about $10,000, which has come also from the community. So we're kind of hoping to close in on the first $60,000 by the end of the month.
Good.
Once you get this accomplished and you're on the air and have the studio, what kind of operational cost are you expecting year in and year out to run the station?
We estimated the first year of operations at around $80,000 per year. That probably will go up a little bit because right now we're all volunteer organization, and eventually it would be good for us to have a paid station manager at least, or possibly operations manager.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Excellent questions, Rick.
I would encourage you guys to consider us a partner at some level at this point, if in nothing more than providing some of the outreach as to what's going on in the community. But I would also encourage you as you get up and operational, keep us posted as we go into budget times, just to see where we can be.
Thanks, we appreciate that.
I don't see a way for us to participate in these initial fund drives because unless something is embraced by the community and really gets going, I would be really hesitant to jump in. But once it is, and once we can demonstrate what we're able to do, then it's a conversation I'd love to have.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
All right.
We understand that right now it's up to us to prove that we can get on the air, so that's our goal, just to reach that benchmark. I would like, in closing, to just express a little bit of the spirit of what we're doing. It really kind of jumped out at me when I read this article in the Tribune. It's really hard to communicate the level of kind of sparkle and
community enjoyment that comes with a station like this. And we really encourage you, as you begin to figure out how to implement these recommendations, to use the station as a resource, not only for certainly, I think, notifying people about meetings and recording them in some level to the public is very, very important. But there's also an intangible here that I encourage you to keep in mind, which is the way a station like this works with that kind of intangible thing of quality of life that makes the community attractive to people. That's really, in some ways, what we're about. And I really encourage you to use your imagination as you move forward on how we can do that. Finally, I would like to also say one of our board members here, Kay Paddock, is also here. She's silently listening. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thank you. Good. All right. Moving on to item 10 is an update on redistricting and reprecincting. Lucy Martin, where did she go? Oh, she's still back there? Okay. All right. And Danny Dunham. Good. Okay.
I'm gonna stand. Yeah, my chart girl here.
Do you have a pointer?
I do not have a pointer. I have decided, after working on redistricting and reprecincting since about last April, that we need a better format to display maps in this room. I decided to do that. Lucy Martin, the Auditor, Commissioner of Elections. I'm just giving you an update. We did pass the county ordinance back in October, which put redistricting and reprecincting into effect. But we're now going to be, actually, that's going to come home to roost as we send a mailing out to the active voters in Story County, which we're doing through the Secretary of State's office. Those cards should go out, if all goes as planned, the week of February 13th. And I would just like you to be prepared as you go to basketball games and shop in the aisles of Fairway. If people ask you questions about why their precinct changed, that you know how to answer those questions. The first scheduled election that these go into effect, and they did go into effect on January 15th of this year, is the primary of June 5th. However, we have a special election in Nevada School District on the 7th of February. And we expect to have two special elections on April 3rd, one in the city Ames School District and one in Colonesco School District. So we'll be test driving our new precincts in that case. The big change is going to be for the Ames, and I don't have the map here, but the Ames School Districts, instead of using all 20 precincts we have consolidated, we're going to use four. This is new. This is allowed under the code. It was at the discretion of the auditor's office. I chose to do that because, generally speaking, the turnout for a school election is in the single digits. Opening all 20 precincts, while it's very convenient to the voter, they never have to change where they go to vote. It should save the Ames Community School District, I think, approximately a third of the costs. Most of that's in election officials, which is 55% of the cost of any given election, rule of thumb. So instead of going to all 20, I'm going to go to four. I'm inviting myself to the next Ames School Board meeting to go over this and bring them a map, and we'll see how that works. I think it will be very good in the long run. Anything you do every 10 years, redistricting like this, it's a big change for everybody. It's a big change for our office. We're trying to wrap our minds around how we do things and how we talk to voters, and the reason I'm coming to you is that this year is going to be all about public education. We're working on press releases, talking to all the public officials we can. I want to thank Danny Dunham and Patty Hilleman, especially in our office. Everybody worked on redistricting, but they worked really hard. The Secretary of State's office was extremely instrumental in helping us, as was Matt Boyk in GIS and Scott Wall, our mapping technician. We're still in the process of getting all this information up on the website. Individual precincts are all posted. When we go into website redesign, we hope that these are more accessible to the public, just as we hope that the new website is more accessible to the public. things we're still working on is like the voter information system, which we work with the GIS tables. So if you type in your address, you can find out where you go to vote. So we expect a lot of phone calls, a lot of questions, especially in the city of Ames where the precinct lines really got redrawn and the ward lines. Other major changes were Lafayette Township is now no longer votes with Story City. Palestine Township now votes by itself, not with Huxley or Slater-Sheldahl. And that's some of that has to do with house districts, some of that has to do with population. Those are probably the biggest changes I can think of. We are consolidating precincts for all our school districts. It's worked really successfully with Gilbert and Nevada. Nevada is geographically our largest school district. They've been voting in one precinct for at least 10 years. So we hope it saves all the school districts some money and that the voters get used to it soon. It's going to be a learning curve for all of us. So I don't know if you guys had any questions. If you had picked up any comments when you went to caucus or other meetings about new precincts. Some of the lines are really antic. That's just how the census drew them. It wouldn't have been my choice either. Wards 3 and 4 in Ames especially look like jigsaw puzzle pieces. But that's just, those are the lines we had to work with. So.
Okay. But as we look at it from now, the visualization of it, it looks like it would be easier to follow and identify. But however, when you get down to the small specific maps, it's a little bit different. It has a little different look to it, particularly those areas where there is some overlapping. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Ames. So you could, that's old and new.
Right.
That's as clean as Matt Boyd could get it for
right.
me. It looks really different. Especially, I think people going from Ames 3-5 to Ames 1-2.
Uh-huh.
We were able to recycle, I think, 99% of our polling places. So. We will be posting at all those places about where they go, and it will be, you know, us educating ourselves, the election officials, and the voters. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be at least a year-long project for us. So.
I just heard of a new radio station that's coming on in August.
Hey. Maybe they'd like to help us out here. So.
Yeah, right.
Thanks
great.
For your time.
You bet. Thank you. Good. Okay. Moving on to personnel action. Shelley, I want to make sure that I am correct. That we need to add to the list I believe it's Gary Lau Backus, maybe I'm mispronouncing that, the promotion from the Sheriff's Department as outlined in the green form of $2,549.94 to the list. We got this in last Friday, but it was after the agenda and everything had been put together, so I was just asked to bring
that. That was a promotion in the sheriff's office?
Per union contract. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think that one was per union contract. I think
no,
that was a promotion.
No.
He had wrote on there that it was per contract.
Oh. Well, his salary would be per contract.
Outlined in the union contract.
Right, but it was a promotion.
But this action is a promotion. He was promoted to sergeant.
Yeah.
Good point. Good point of clarification. Okay.
Okay. Do you want that taken off of the minutes, the per contract?
I don't think this one is per contract.
Well,
I think this is per promotion.
But we need to understand that, make it correct in terms of how it's done. So if you could look into that, I'd appreciate it.
I'll move approval of the personnel actions.
Second.
Okay. As amended?
As amended.
Okay. It's been moved and second the approval of the personnel action as amended. And further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, thank you. And now we come down to the consent items. Board, please remove item 12 and 13, and we have a request to pull item 9 for discussion.
I'll move the consent agenda with the noted changes.
Second.
And moved and second, the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. And now for item number 9 is the consideration to establish a 6% interest rate for stamp drainage district warrants when necessary in accordance with State Treasurer's Iowa Public Fund Rate Guidelines. Welcome back, Treasurer's Office. Thank you. Mr. Sanders, if I could just maybe yield to you, you wanted to some discussion regarding this, so please go ahead.
Okay, I'm trying to wrap my mind around this in a way that I can understand it. Currently, if we hold stamp warrants that we owe to a contractor, we're paying 7%.
Right.
We don't know what... Is it different terminology when we hold something for a taxpayer? If a taxpayer is paying us, what is that terminology that we use? So for these drainage districts, the intention, I think the belief was that we would do the work, the county would pay for it or hold those stamp warrants until such time as we could levy, and then there was going to be an option for some of those landowners, if they could not pay the entire levy in 1 year, that the county would hold that, and I don't know if that's considered a stamp warrant or that's considered something else, would hold that until...
Different things.
Okay. Talk me through it.
The first half is going back to this interest rate. If there's not enough money in that fund for us to pay it, we're charging 7% until you adopt this.
Ourselves.
Yes.
And paying that to the contractor.
Right.
That okay.
So we're going to be charging the district 7% interest until there's money in there to pay the bills.
Okay. That I'm struggling with that in that there's no way for us to have the money in the account at this point until we can levy.
Correct.
In June and collect in September, but yet we're still charging those property holders some kind of interest rate in the meantime.
And that current interest rate is 7%.
Seven, okay.
So we have stamped warrants right now for the drainage district because there's not any money in there to move
right.
and pay the bills. So when that money comes in, we will pay the bills, but we will also be charging the drainage district 7% interest, which should be built in the levies when they go out. Correct?
Well, sure.
I say we all need a mic for this conversation.
Some drainage districts have small balances and they can handle the payments. If they can't handle the payments, that's when we do this. That's when we charge the interest rate. We go ahead and pay out to whoever has billed us and then charge them the interest. And like she said, when the money's there, Scott will calculate those stamped in when he's figuring levies. So when we get levy money in, then we actually put
pay
it back
bill.
In the district. Yeah.
But we're charging them interest on money that they don't have an opportunity to pay because we don't tell them that they owe it.
Because the code doesn't allow us to pre-levy. The code does not allow in drainage districts for you, as drainage district trustees, it does not allow you.
We can maintain a certain amount.
You can maintain a small amount.
Small amount in that.
But you cannot just levy for the purpose of levying and have money in there. The drainage code was written in, what, 1868? Or something ridiculous.
Yeah, but I don't buy even in 1868 that anybody would have been happy about paying interest on money that they didn't know they owed before they knew they owed it. I mean, that's where I'm having trouble getting to.
And that's correct.
Yeah.
You are correct, but that's the way it is.
That's where it is. And so to add to that, what options really exist? In other words, we know that some works, if the money cannot be paid up front, and the contractors are expecting payment at some point, they're sitting there promising to go ahead and complete the work, but it's feasible to have an increased interest built on top of that because right now they aren't receiving those dollars. And so technically someone has to pay that. Now, should that be the responsibility of individual, the district, but the way the laws are set, those dollars go back to the landowners that the work is basically being done. Am I not correct in that regard?
Part
I mean,
of it.
Yeah, so in other words,
we're not paying the contractors.
We're not paying the contractors.
pull the mic closer.
We're going to pay them eventually.
Eventually.
But we're not paying the contractors any interest.
Right. They're not getting any interest. Huh. Oh.
Correct.
You're not? How come they're not getting interest? They would get interest.
If there's a project that is the drainage district, the drainage trustees want to do,
mm-hmm.
and if there's a contractor involved, the contractor going into it knows that they're not going to get dollars right away, or that there isn't dollars there. Part of the incentive for them to actually do the work and know that they're not going to get paid right away is the fact that we pay them interest. The drainage district pays them interest on those dollars. So when the dollars are levied and become available, the county gets it back. The drainage district gets it back. But we've already paid the contractor plus interest.
The question comes around when we
again
hold the landowners that they could take up to 10 years to pay this, and that we would charge them 3% interest
as drainage district trustees.
As drainage district trustees.
Which is my first thought when I explained this to you guys. I thought we couldn't do that, but we can do that.
But we're losing money, aren't we? We're losing 3% on the money. If we're paying a contractor 6%,
technically we're going to be making almost 9%.
You can set each drainage in general at 6%, but specific projects at a different percent, is my understanding.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there a reason, or take me through the reason, that we as Story County can't go ahead and pay the bill to the contractor that's doing the work as a loan to the drainage district? Chart
and assess interest to that loan.
Yes, yeah.
I was getting there.
That's the issue.
Not a.
And that is a different conversation. At this point, no, it's a continuing conversation. The investment policy, the drainage, is one step. I am also still going to bring to you a non-current debt, so that you can loan the money to the district for that very purpose. Because you are going to, as Board of Supervisors, you've already committed to loan the money to the drainage district.
Okay.
Right.
So what's going to happen is, I'm still visualizing. I think we're all trying to discuss how this works. The amount of money that the contractor has put a claim in for, the money gets transferred from the general fund to the drainage district fund. The check gets cut to the contractor. Then when the levy is done, that's when the interest starts on the warrant.
Done, but they have until September to pay that with no interest.
Correct.
Right.
Another reason I thought it would be imperative to get these out sooner than later, to give them the option of not knowing they're paying interest on something.
Right. Well, I thought that we just said they aren't paying interest. I'm having trouble getting there on this one specific example. Can you help me?
Well, I'm not sure I understand your concern. Here's how I see it. Number one, I think that we don't set a 6%, but rather we set the policy of the county that it's per code.
Okay.
Number one, I say that because I think it's important that this board, when they sit as drainage trustees, not limit their discretion. But by saying it's 6%, the statutory maximum, you're saying every loan is 6%, and you've essentially destroyed any discretion later to determine those interest rates. So I'm suggesting that today, item number 9B, that we simply say that the rate will be up to the statutory maximum.
But doesn't have to be.
Which means it's between 0 and 6% as we sit here today. As I understand it, that 6% rate has been in effect as far back as we can determine the last 10, 12 years. It's unlikely to change, but it also saves us having to come back every year and revisit the issue. We all know how those things can drop off people's radar. So I think if I understand the process correctly, you, when you're sitting here as drainage trustees, authorize a project. The folks who benefit from that don't have the money to pay for it. So you authorize the county to extend that money. In extending that money, we are essentially loaning it to the drainage district from the general fund through a non-current debt resolution. The treasurer then invests in the stamped warrants arising from that as an investment tool pursuant to the policy. And I'm seeing nods of understanding, but I'm not sure that answers your question, though.
Yeah, okay. I'm still struggling with where the stamp warrants come from if we've paid the bill from the general fund. It seems to me there's no stamp warrants.
Well, there is because
the timing of when the payments and all of this has to be authorized.
Right now we have bills that have come in.
Right.
And there's been a check cut. Okay. And they're sitting in Jane's drawer, stamped. We cannot mail them out because there's no money in the drainage district fund.
For not only that drainage district, but for numerous drainage districts. We're not talking just Milford 32 in this case, okay?
Yep.
We're talking in general drainage districts. Two different situations at this point in time. Yes, they're holding stamped for numerous drainage districts that will be levied or will be collected on next year. Also.
Okay, and the process of getting all this done, I'm fine with. What I'm trying to get to and make sure is that the three of us, wearing our hats as either drainage district trustees or board of supervisors, that we're not passing something that now is going to contradict what we've told these landowners in our previous meetings with them.
Well, that's why I'm suggesting that we not set a fixed interest rate, but rather just simply adopt a rate up to the statutory maximum.
Yep.
So that, one, we preserve our negotiating power with contractors when you're sitting as trustees, because if we don't, then every contract from here on out is just plain 6%.
Okay.
And your discretion to set that. Okay. So
it can be set project by project.
That's correct. Now, in saying that, understand that I think we need some consistency. So we're not sort of haphazardly just setting rates, but nevertheless, my basic point is that we just simply preserve discretion to do that and negotiating power to do that. If we simply say it's 6%, then we're done. And I don't think the law would support the limitation of discretion in that way. So I hope I haven't confused anything.
I think
what we simply need to understand is we're investing in a tool that's essentially a debt.
Right.
The same way a bank would if they're loaning you money on the debt on your house. They charge you an interest rate. The mechanisms by which that's accomplished is the setting of the interest rate policy, the investment policy, and the process by which we issue these stamped warrants.
So theoretically, we are doing an internal transfer rather than going out to a bank or lending institutions and getting a bond or a loan to cover that, which would be an interest charge, on top of that.
And would
involve
additional costs.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Okay. But, to me, Rick, this is a great question. It helped clarify what we already know is one of the most difficult areas to understand fully, how this drainage code and laws there. But that's a very good question and one that we need to understand what action we're taking and how we proceed in the future. So thank you for that.
I think the action taken today is fairly simple and straightforward. Mm-hmm. The complexity comes in each particular instance how that policy gets applied. But I think by setting it, as I've suggested here today, that it will simplify things.
Okay. We can
modify this.
We can make a motion to establish an interest rate not to exceed 6%
But what I'm not
no.
is not to exceed
the
rate set, by,
the
rate the rate set by statute for stamped drainage district warrants when necessary in Story County.
Is that a motion?
Sure was.
A second.
Okay, it's been moved to establish a rate for stamped drainage district warrants as set by statute. I don't know if I need to say any.
Not to exceed
the percentage set by statute. Okay? Great.
Get that, Shelley?
And now just conversation before we vote on it. Steve, this action does not limit our flexibility to fulfill what we've talked about with this one particular drainage district.
Based on what I know, that's correct.
Okay.
Great.
So now, does this change the interest rate that the contractor is going to get currently? I mean, has he got some stamped warrants that are 7% and after now he's going to go back to 6?
The ones that we have right now.
Not necessarily going back to 6.
Not, right.
Not necessarily.
Well, I mean, it seems to me we better have that conversation pretty quick because...
We darn well better.
That's you right. bet.
I don't know what we've obligated to contractually. So,
right.
And I don't know that...
Three.
I don't hear the motion being that this is retroactive. So,
right.
And I don't know that I could tell you legally that we should be making it retroactive because I'm not aware of what...
No, I'm good. If our policy for whatever reason was 7% up till today, that's fine. That's what it was. We deal with that. But from this point on, it is up, if this passes, it is up to the what's set by the state. But we better get back in here next week and set the rate for the stamped warrants that you've got coming in on this one particular drainage district for sure.
I think that's correct, yes.
Right?
So I believe so.
It will certainly clarify any confusion that might exist regarding this particular drainage district.
Yes.
Steve, can we impose upon you to work with these three ladies to get us what we need to make this all come together next week for this?
I will do my best, yes. I'm sure we'll all put our heads together. And
all right, I'll try not to make it so laborious next week, but
no,
I wasn't getting to it.
These are absolutely important questions. We need to have the discussion.
Good. So with that, we had a motion and...
Question.
Okay.
I didn't catch all of Rick's last comment, but my question is, not that we're going to be able to pull this out of your memory bank. Was the understanding with the drainage district in Milford only that the stamped warrants were 3% or just their 10-year loan if they could not pay by the due date was 3%?
I thought and I'll just put my 2 cents in and then you guys tell me. I thought it was the 10-year.
Let's get the minutes from Scott Wall to make sure where it is. But if the interest rate to the landowners is 3% and we're paying 6%, then we're going to have to make up the difference somewhere, so we better have that conversation as well.
My understanding from Scott is that you discussed it at the last Milford 32 meeting, but
no motion was made because that had to be done at a later time.
Yeah, well, and there's no doubt in my mind what we left those landowners with the impression.
Right.
All right, we'll get there.
Great. So with that, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Well, wait a minute. This is under consent agenda. This is a roll call. And I will call for the question. Paul, you made the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. And Rick?
Aye.
Aye. Clinton, aye. Motion for the interest rates as submitted is adopted.
I wasn't going to make you repeat the motion.
Thank you. I'm glad you didn't. Okay, then moving on to public comment number two. Items not on the agenda. Anyone? No one? Okay, announcements from the supervisors. Anything?
Just that there's a government restructuring committee meeting Thursday evening in Zering at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Next one, I think, isn't until the March 5th.
Rescheduled, yeah. And then I will be attending a meeting on Friday with the ISAC staff and the executive board of the Iowa Association of County Supervisors affiliate as we address the mental health reform proposal that has been now made public. So I will give a report back to you at a later time what comes from that meeting. Okay?
Move adjournment.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Luke, did you get all that? Can you explain it to me?